Hari Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Page 79. Then the Bhagavatam narrative takes us through questions that Shaunaka places before Sutta, and Sutta's reply to them. O Sutta Goswami, how and when did Srila Vyasadeva get the inspiration for this great work? And for what reason was it compiled? Sukadeva Goswami was a fully realized soul, although he wandered about appearing like a madman. How did the citizens of Hastinapur receive him? And how did King Parikit happen to meet him, making it possible for Srimad Bhagavatam to be recited for the first time? It was Sukadeva Goswami's habit to stay no longer at the door of a householder than it took for a cow to be milked. And this he did only to sanctify that householder's residence. Footnote 34. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes in his commentary to 148, Sukadeva must have remained a long time with Parikit in order to explain this work. It could not be otherwise. On the pretext of begging alms, he would wait in a house for only the time it took to milk a cow. However, he actually purified the houses. He went there to give all the jivas the spiritual goal of life. Maharaj Parikit was a first-class devotee of the Lord, and he was the emperor of the entire world. Why did he give up everything to sit down on the banks of the Ganga and fast until death? He was full of youth and strength, and his enemies used to come and bow down at his feet and surrender their wealth unto him for their own benefit. Why did he want to give up everything, including his very life? Great souls do not live for any selfish interests. Even if Maharaj Parikit had no worldly attachment, how could he give up his body, which was the shelter for all others? We know that you are expert in the meaning of all subjects, except some portions of the Vedas. And thus you can clearly explain the answers to all the questions we have just put to you. Footnote 35. That's verses 3 to 13. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes in his commentary to 1.4.13, Snatam vacham means having full ability to say. Anyatra chandasat means other than the statements of the Vedas, since you are not qualified for that. One should not worry that Bhagavatam is therefore inferior to the Vedas because of Sutta's particular qualification. All persons are qualified for the final fruit of the tree of all the Vedas, the Bhagavatam. And Bhagavatam, being the fruit of the tree of the Vedas, is the essence of all Shrutis. Right, so that Jiva Goswami is making great effort to establish. Right? Because here is that being a Sutta, then depending upon the position, then they may or may not be dealing so much with the Vedas. Generally, suttas deal with the Puranas. Right? That's the position. Because sutta means father's the Kshatriya, mother's Brahman. Right? So it has both elements, but it's not anuloma, it's pratiloma. Anuloma means with the, with the grain. Right? And pratiloma means against. So the mother being in the higher position, then you're going to have that kind of nature, that Brahminical, but you're going to have the father's, also that spirit, right? So that it's that mix is not ideal, right? So they may take on a Brahminical nature, may take on a Kshatriya nature, may take on the nature of a chariot driver, any of these. So we see here Sutta, then
and his father, they were taking on brahminical position. That was their nature. But we saw from the father that element of that Kshatriya spirit come out when Balaram came, and he was on the Vyasasan, so following the rules, he's doing what he's supposed to do, and like this. So then it wasn't exactly how it's supposed to work out. Right? It's not that position comes in. That's the difficulty with mixing. That's why one tries to avoid that. Right? So then, here, so though many of the technical points of the Vedas you may not know, but the point is it's the essence of the Vedas, so that's the whole point of the Vedas, to give its essence. So if you know the essence, then you're getting the benefit anyway. No need to study, be so expert in these portions of the Vedas. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Qualification here doesn't mean that it's something wrong. It's just like a doctor has no qualification in engineering. Right? Yes. But does anybody bring that up? Does anybody make that? Yeah, well, yeah, he's a doctor, you know, he's one of the top surgeons in the country. Yeah, but in engineering, the guy's complete buffoon. You know, does anybody say that? You know? No, but, you know what he does in neurobrain surgery, no one else does. He's written so many books. Yeah, but that guy couldn't win a Formula One race if, you know, his life depended upon it. You know what I'm saying? So, therefore, it's not a problem. Right, but some may take it that way. So they may think he's not qualified for the Vedas, so what can he give from the Bhagavatam? But the actual point is the Bhagavatam being the actual true Vedanta, it's actually the conclusion. So if you don't know the technical in the first sections of the Vedas, you don't worry about it. But what's in the second sections of the Vedas, that's what he understands. Right? So Uttara Mimamsa, that he knows very excellently. He may not know the Purva Mimamsa. Right? Jaimini knows that. So you have a question on that? Ask Jaimini. You want to know what's the conclusion? Ask, here, Supadeva or Sutta Goswami. Mm. Yes?
Ashram Shankara.
Ashram Shankara. It means that they can't figure out which ashram they belong in. Or they're in one ashram doing something or the other.
Bachelor ashram.
Huh?
Bachelor.
Bachelor. That's a standard.
Spiritual.
No, grihastha should be spiritual, but where they have this renounced kind of element, where they're not, it's not sannyas, but that renunciation is more for their own benefit. It's not in connection with family, right? Because otherwise the renunciation that they have is beneficial for the whole family, so it should be done in that way. But if it's only for their own benefit, then that would be ashram shankara. Okay. As already mentioned, all the above questions will be summarized as follows. O Sutta Goswami, may you please relate the pious message of Srimad Bhagavatam as spoken by Srila Shukadeva Goswami. My question 7 includes these 6 specific items. Okay, so now we'll go. Let's see this. Okay, yeah. So. Question 7 includes these 6 specific items. Right? Yes. Item 1. When, where, and why was the Bhagavatam recited? 1, 4, 3. Because it's natural, because you want to know, anything that's interesting, you want to know more about the circumstances, right? The situation is which then you can interact with people. So if you're interested in people, naturally there'd be an interest in the situation, because the two go together. You interact in a situation. Yes. Item 2. From where did Sukadeva's father, Krishna Dwaipayana Vyasa, get the inspiration to compile the Bhagavatam? Right? Because he spoke it, but he heard it from Vyasadeva. So how did Vyasadeva get this inspiration? Since he wrote the Mahabharata as the finish of all the Vedic literatures. So how is it now that this inspiration came for this novel literature? Right? Item 3. After wandering about the earth like a naked madman, how was Sukadeva Goswami recognized as the great sage he actually was when he entered Hastinapur? Right? Because as we see, when he's entering Hastinapur, everybody who's hanging out with him doesn't recognize who he is at all. Right? So that's 1, 4, 6. Item 4. How did Emperor Parikit meet Sukadeva Goswami? Right? So it means, it's a big place, right? The world's a big place. Hastinapur is a big place. How did they bump into each other, right? There's generally naked madmen walking around the street and kings, they generally don't go to that. Right? Item 5.
Why did wealthy and powerful Emperor Parikshit renounce his kingdom to fast to death on the bank of the Ganges? Right? Because they're making the point, they're not asking from, you know, wow, he's got it all, why would he give that up? Their point is this: he's a pure devotee. Like that. He's fully engaging everything in Krishna's service. So he's setting a perfect example. He is protecting the whole kingdom so everybody else can be engaged in their duties. Right? And not only, so why would there be a necessity to give that up? Why would he do that? Because as a standard thing, you wouldn't do it. If you have a favorable situation to perform service, and not only that, so many other people are benefiting and they're able to do the service because of that, why would you give it up? Because otherwise, that kind of renunciation is not worthwhile. It's not valuable. We may think, no, it's renounced. Why would they be holding on to the God? No. Because renunciation, just for renunciation, doesn't have any value. Renunciation connected to Krishna, that has value. Right. The other, it's like within what's not valuable, there's more or less valuable. You know, like the junk in your closet, right? You haven't used it for years. You haven't thought about it, right? It's not important, but when you drag it out, you can divide it into what's more important junk and what's less important junk, right? That's the material world, right? The only valuable thing is what is connected to Krishna. It's not connected. It may be nicer junk. You know, morality's nicer junk. Dharma's nicer junk. Liberation's nicer junk. You understand?
Yes.
We'll let you work out the last one. Leave something for the imagination. Okay, item 6. Emperor Parikshit did not live to enjoy his wealth and power. He lived to give shelter to his subjects. So why did he give up his body, which was a shelter for others? So not only is he giving up the kingdom and the wealth, but he's giving up his body. But because of his body, others are able to, be protected.
Yes.
Right? So then that also. Right? So these are their questions. So this means they actually understand Dharma and the Vedic system. They don't have a problem with people being situated where they are, and somebody having nothing like themselves, or the king, the emperor having everything, right? Because they have nothing, they're committed to that, and they're fine with that. So, but they don't have a problem that the king's got everything. In fact, they're wondering, why would he give it up? Because he's doing such a great job. This is the Vedic culture, right? There's no envy or jealousy. You want this stuff, go out and get it. You don't want it, then don't bother with it. But to not have it and then want it or criticize others, that's a waste of time. That's useless. Right? Sutta's answer to question 7, of course, carries on until the very end of Srimad Bhagavatam. Right? The 6 items, though, are addressed in first canto. Item 1 is addressed from 1414 to the end of the first canto, 1940. Item 2, so that's the where was the Bhagavatam, when and why, because it's going to arrange the whole thing till you get there. Right? Item 2 is addressed in chapters 5 and 6. And that is about here. So how did Sukadeva's father get the inspiration? Right? Then item 3 is in chapter 19, specifically 1:19:30. That after wandering a while, you know, how was he recognized? Item 4 is addressed in chapter 19. How did Emperor Parikshit meet Sukadeva Goswami? Item 5 is addressed in chapters 16 through 19. You know, why he was giving up the wealth. So the whole story of the sage and Samika Rishi and his son. Right? And item 6 is addressed in chapter 19, specifically 1:19:13 through 16, spoken by Parikshit Maharaj. Right? So he's saying why this is going on. Okay. Verses 14 to 33. Sutta Goswami describes Srila Vyasadeva's despondency. Right? Does this make sense why we're doing this, why this section is here? You know, because the point is the questions are the actual theme line. It works by that. Because the question is asked, then an answer is given. But the point is the answer is given, so it's complete. So whatever items are necessary, stories or points, to answer it according to the particular audience, that's given. So sometimes it's very quite elaborate. Right? Because we can just say,
yeah, Vyasadeva didn't feel good about it, you know, because it didn't seem to be very complete. And so Narad Muni came along and said, yeah, it's not very complete, so you should make it complete. And he asked how to make it complete. So he says, well, here, these four verses might fill it out for you. And so then he took those four verses, and then his meditation expanded them to 18,000 verses.
Horrible.
Yeah. So, in a sense, so they give the whole, why, the moods, everything, because if it doesn't explain that, what are we absorbed in our own head? Our feelings, our moods, our reasons, our identities. So that's why the Puranas are superior, because they go into that detail. What was Vyasadeva's position? What was the situation? What was he feeling? Why was he feeling that? How Narad Muni dealt with that? You understand?
Yes.
This is the position.
Yes. As all living entities are engaged in quests and answers anyway.
Yes, so yes, that's true. Well. Also, they're all, yeah, probably mentions that, you know, like in the, you know, in the morning when the, you know, sun starts to come up, all the birds start question and answer, you know, people start question and answer, you know, like that. It's all happening. You know. You get your newspaper, you know, what's happening.
Yeah.
Like that. Okay, so that the questions are always going to take one through what is the storyline, right? Then in that, you have stories to explain the questions. So one can say, no, it's the stories, but why are the stories there? Why that story? Why not another story? It's there because of the question. Right? So they're answering the question. They're not just sitting there and talking, right? So he's mentioned, this is not James Joyce or something. They're not just going along and just, you know, whatever comes to mind, you know. That makes sense, yeah. Verses 14 to 33. Suta Goswami describes Srila Vyasadeva's despondency. In this section, Suta tells how Veda Vyas compiled and edited the Vedic literatures for the benefit of the unfortunate souls of Kali Yuga. Even after his great work was complete, Veda Vyas still felt dissatisfied, just as he was contemplating the cause of his despondency. His spiritual master, Narad Muni, appeared, right? Because now he's compiled, right? Because this, it means we have to look at that. We just say, yeah, he compiled it. But think about the modern, you know, it means your intellectual field. If someone can take a body of knowledge from a wide range of sources and put that together in a document that gives a very clear understanding, people will consider that something very great. Right? And if someone just does one of those, they're great. Now, Vyasadeva's done that in all branches of knowledge. You know, so you don't get greater than that, right? You know, it means you don't have to worry about Vyasadeva perishing because he published. Right, you know, he published, you know, they're still talking about what he published, right? You know, other people, they, no one even knows. Right? Now, he's done that, but he's not satisfied. Because, and one could say, okay, that's because, you know, Ayurveda and these other things like that, they are dealing with the mundane side. Though, you know, you may point to the spiritual, but it's basically predominantly there. But then someone could say, no, but he compiled Vedanta Sutra, which is directly philosophical. Right? So the culture has been, cultural has been, means your specifics have been taken care of by the variety of Vedic literatures. The whole work holding it together culturally is all done by the Mahabharata. Right? The Vedanta Sutra gives the essence of all the philosophy. So what's missing? You know, who's done that? Right, you know, Plato plays around with, you know, what an ideal republic should look like. You know, Marx tried his hand at it, didn't work out very good. You know, so many people have tried. But here he's doing something that's actually working. People are following. The whole world is prosperous. But he's not satisfied. Right? Does that make sense? Yes. So, in other words, it's a little bit more than just, he wrote something and didn't like it, you know? Like, I wrote my essay this morning, you know, for chapter one. I didn't like it. Like that.
I can relate.
Yeah, you can relate to that. Yeah, like that. What is his name? What would it mean? I wouldn't even make a comment. You don't want to hear the comment. Suta Goswami replied, the present, okay. Okay, even after his great work was complete, Veda Vyas still felt dissatisfied, just as he was contemplating the cause of his despondency. His spiritual master, Narad Muni, appeared.
Suta Goswami replied, "This present cycle of yugas is the 28th in the rule of the Vaivasvata Manu, once during each whole day of Lord Brahma. When his particular cycle of the four yugas, when this particular cycle of the four yugas occurs in this particular manvantar, the second yuga, Dwapara, changes place with the third yuga, Treta. This adjustment occurs due to the appearance of the original personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, in that Dwapara yuga." Does that make sense?
In other words, Dwapara always comes second. That's why it uses the, you know, has the dva part. Right? So it's always Satya, Dvapara, Treta, and Kali.
But in the Vaivasvata Manvantara, which is the seventh, and in the 28th cycle of the yugas, right? In that one, then the two switch.
Yes.
In the other study guide that we have now, the Chakrasandarbha, there's a mentioning from Vishnu Purana that says that during Vaivasvata Manu's reign, 28 Vyasadevas appeared in consecutive Dwapara yugas. How is that reconciled?
He may compile it in the Dwapara yuga. They get stupid then. Right? Here they make it through Dwapara. It means they you know, get through Satya and Treta without being so dull. But now then they get dull a little earlier. But you also remember the point is appearance and writing are two different things. You know, it's not like Einstein when he was born, you know, then, you know.
Yeah,
like that. You know, he was documenting that. You know, he had to get a little older. So the point is he can appear then. But he'll write when just at the Sunday of the Kali Yuga. Does that make sense? So this one, because they're right next to each other, then it makes it it's a little bit more of a nice flow. Does that make sense? Just like Parasaram is from the Treta Yuga, right? Because then he did his tour and, you know, met Ramachandra, and then, you know, he's sitting around, and then Drona meets him. Like that, and then Karna goes and meets him, like that, and even Bhishma Dev fights with him. You understand? So, you know, they may live a while. It's not that, you know, he's got his 100 years, you know, by all Kali Yuga times, that's it. You know, so some of these great personalities, they'll last a long time. They'll stay a long time. And so if he's born in Dwapara, fine. But he documents at the, what do you call it? The Sunday between the age before Kali Yuga. Right? Does that make sense?
So another question is that because the Treta Yuga and the Dwapara Yuga, they change the position, does that mean that the Yuga Dharma also changes
the position? The Yuga Dharma is with the age. So it just means that generally you go from meditation into deity worship, into yajna, into Sankirtan. Right, so it's just in this age it switches. So you go meditation, yajna, then deity worship. Because the point is the ultimate deity is Swayam Krishna.
I just thought there was a connection to the facilities being less from one age, you know, consecutively. One of the items of dharma is moved.
Yeah, age. No, that happens. But Krishna doesn't have a problem with that. Because wherever he is, he's followed by dharma and knowledge and everything. That's there. Plus, you have the element is that it switches because Lord Chaitanya is going to come. So if Krishna came in Dwapara Yuga before Treta, you know, so you have it would be 864,000 years ago. It'd be a little hard to connect them. But if it was just, you know, the end of the Dwapara, Krishna appears, Swayam Krishna, and then Lord Chaitanya, then we tend to connect them. You know, 500 years ago, 5,000 years ago, it kind of works. Right? But otherwise, then you're going to have, it's on the borderline, they can relate to it. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like, you know, Abraham's trying to, you know, figure out what to do with the sheep and stuff like that, and, you know, Krishna and pastimes and the whole scene going on. And India's going, you know, you're saying you can, but if you go back 800,000 years, then it would be a little hard for people to relate to, you know. So it works out nicely because the two go together. Otherwise, the avatars just stand on their own. Does that?
Yes. So the humans have to switch because Krishna just doesn't like to appear at the end of Prema Yuga?
No, I think it's Jiva Goswami explains to Vishwanath that because Swayam Krishna and Swayam Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are going to be there, therefore it switches so they're next to each other. So you can relate them to each other.
And he couldn't do that if he came at the end of Treta.
Because what I'm saying is then you have an 864,000 year gap between the yugas. Because you'd have Treta in between. That's the point. So this is, they're just next to each other. Krishna just came and now he came again as Lord Chaitanya. You know what I'm saying? Like that. Is that Okay. This adjustment occurs through the appearance of the original personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, in that Dwapara Yuga. In the third sandhya of that Dwapara Yuga, Srila Vyasadeva was born as the son of Satyavati and the great sage Parasara. Srila Vyasadeva's ashram was situated at Samyaprasha, near Bhadarik Ashram in the Himalayas. One day, after bathing in the river Saraswati, at sunrise, Srila Vyasadeva sat down on the shore to meditate. Being a liberated soul, Vyasa could foresee the anomalies of the upcoming age of Kali, wherein everything deteriorates. This is due to Kalena Avyakta Ramhasa, powerful unseen forces of time. He understood that the faithless persons would become very dull-headed and restless due to lack of goodness. So he began to think deeply about what could be done for their welfare. The correct means for purifying men's occupations, Srila Vyasadeva knew, is the process of sacrifice outlined in the Vedas. And so to simplify the whole method, he divided the one Veda into four. Footnote 36. Besides dividing the Vedas in four parts, Srila Vyasadeva also summarized them in Vedanta Sutra. This, however, proved to be deficient amendment because the sutras are often interpreted in contradictory ways. Apart from that, there are other Astika schools besides Vedanta. So why should one accept the Vedantic Siddhanta? Thus, there was a need for a natural commentary on Vedanta Sutra. Srila Jiva Goswami writes in Tattva Sandarbha. Someone may point out that the powerful saint Sri Vyas produced the Vedanta Sutra just to accomplish this task of determining the purport of the entire Vedas and Puranas. Therefore, this person will propose the meaning of all these scriptures should be ascertained by reference to the Vedanta Sutra. But then our conclusions will not be respected by followers of sages who wrote other sutras. And apart from that, certain authors have interpreted the Vedanta Sutras very esoteric and terse. Interpreted the Vedanta Sutra's very esoteric and terse aphorisms in such a way as to distort their meaning. What authority then can actually serve to reconcile all this? We would have such a basis of reconciliation, one might comment, if there were one scripture which fit the definition of a Purana, had Aparosheya authority, contained the essential ideas of all the Vedas, Itihasas and Puranas, gave support to the positions of the Brahma Sutra, and was currently available in full on the earth. Well said, because you have called to mind our most preferred authority, the Emperor of Pramanas, Srimad Bhagavatam. Yes, gives a whole wide list, yeah. Okay. Right, speak.
Emperor
of all Pramanas, yes. So, in other words, the Vedas are there. How would you know? Because there's so much Veda. So you can say, okay, it's been written in the Vedanta Sutra. But then the difficulty comes with so many other great authors. They have also, by studying the Veda, come up with their so-called essence of the Veda as the other schools as the five other schools of Vedic philosophy, right? And they will reference back to the Vedas. Right, so right there, then you have a problem. And then within the Vedanta, then you have so many different commentators on that they come up and twist it because it's very terse. Problem is the Veda is very esoteric, very obscure, and the Vedanta Sutra is very terse. Right, so then you're going to end up with a problem. So you need something that's going to be very direct, very obvious, right? But at the same time, it can't be so academic like these others. So that would mean it would have to be a purana, right? But the problem is the purana, then it also has to be seen as that it has to be on the same level as what the Vedas are trying to establish, right? As we discussed yesterday. If you need to give a complete understanding of the Vedas, you can only complete something with what is the quality of what it is. So you can't complete a gold bracelet with lead, right? You complete it with gold. So that means that if it's giving the essence of the Vedas, it itself has to be apurusheya, right? And so then he's saying, here it is, yes.
But according to that, then all the schools, they should accept Bhagavad, and if they accept Vedanta Sutra by Vyasadeva, and it's going in this direction, so it's a natural commentary, then they should all accept it, and they don't.
But the other schools don't accept Vedanta Sutra.
They comment on it?
No. There's Vedantic commentators on Vedanta Sutra, like Shankara.
So they accept it?
He accepts it. His followers don't accept it. That's why he recommends his followers don't look at Bhagavatam. Right? Because then they'll try to do the same, you know, stupid stuff with them. Right? In other words, he's preaching to Buddhists. His job is to make Buddhists astika by following the Veda. Because Buddha made them the same, you know, intellectual class made them Gnostica by rejecting the Veda. So his is just to bring him back to the Veda. So in that particular mentality, then he's keeping them away from. So at least you've established Vedanta as the top and the Vedic culture. But that's basically as far as you can go with that Buddhist mentality, right? Because for them, everything's, you know, nothing. So at least if you say, okay, switch, it's nothing, but, you know, the light's on. Right, like that. You know, it's a bright light instead of just a dense darkness. So that much adjustment, okay, we can handle that. Does that make sense? So he accepts, but the others, you know, and he recommends they stay away. So all of his, you know, leading people, they stay away. You know, is that? In addition, he compiled historical narrations called Puranas, which are considered to be the fifth Veda. Vyasadeva entrusted the Rig Veda to Pila Rishi, the Sama Veda to Jaimini, the Yajur Veda to Vaishampayana, the Atharva Veda to Angira, and the Puranas to Romaharshana, the father of Suta Goswami. These disciples of Srila Vyasadeva in turn passed on the knowledge to their students. Right, so here's the Puranas were given to Romaharshana Sutta. So Suta Goswami would be very expert in them, but these other aspects he wouldn't. Right? But just like these ones in the Pila Rishi, the Rig Veda, he won't know Sama Veda, which is given to Jaimini. Right? Like that. These disciples of Srila Vyasadeva in turn passed on the knowledge to their students, who passed on to their students, and so on down the authoritative line. And in this way, the various branches of Vedic knowledge and their disciplic successions came into being. Srila Vyasadeva was the editor of all these literatures. For the less intelligent classes of human beings, the women laborers and the fallen descendants of the higher orders, he personally compiled the great historical narration Mahabharata, footnote 37. In Bhagavatam 3.5.12, Vidura explains to Maitreya Muni why Vyasadeva wrote Mahabharata. Your friend, the great sage Krishna Dvaipayana Vyas, has already described the transcendental qualities of the Lord in his great work, the Mahabharata. But the whole idea is to draw the attention of the mass of people to Krishna Katha, Bhagavad Gita, through their strong affinity for hearing mundane topics. Because people like mundane topics. So here's mundane topics that are done in such a way that the storyline appears that way, but it's bringing one to the Pandavas who are connected to the Lord. Right? And then we'll hear the Bhagavad Gita. Like that. So it's a very clever way. It's like, you know, sugar on the outside of medicine, like that. You know, kind of. It works.
Like the airplane with children when you're feeding them.
Yeah, like that. It's just something to...
You only have to do that when... They only have to do that because they don't know how to cook. If it tastes good, then
Then you have to keep their head out of the bucket. But in spite of having worked tirelessly for the welfare of all classes of people, Srila Vyasadeva felt dissatisfied at heart. The sage began to search out the cause of not being satisfied. Footnote 38. It is important to notice that Srila Vyasadeva was searching the cause for his dissatisfaction in his own shortcomings instead of blaming others. Right? So he's, you know, it's not like, you know, these guys are way more stupid than I thought. You know, I knew Kali Yuga, they were dull, but not this dull, right? You know, no, but he's just looking, okay, what, because he's supposed to compile in a way that they'll understand. So then he's looking, okay, so what can I do? Right. Perfection is never attained until one is satisfied at heart. Right? Because satisfied means it indicates the mode of goodness. If there's dissatisfaction, generally it indicates passion and ignorance. Like that. In Vyasadeva, we know he's transcendental, but what Man is pointing out is that, or you can say it doesn't fit the definition of the occupation. You're not situated according to the varna and ashram, right? Properly. So if that's not there, you won't be satisfied. So if satisfaction is there, it means you're rightly situated. Right? And but the satisfaction is consistent, not happy, satisfied. They're two different things. Satisfied means I can do this forever. Right? Happy means it's great right now. Right? So many people think, I'm situating myself, I want to do this, that will make me happy, so that's therefore I should have the right to do that duty. But that's not satisfaction. Even they get that right, they will still never be satisfied. It's guaranteed. It's 100%. Right? I say, if you don't follow your, you know, proper occupational, you know, duty in that, then dissatisfaction is guaranteed 100%.
Right? 0% fail rate.
Yes. Does that make sense? So, therefore, he is compiling, but he's compiling to make it so that they will understand what's the ultimate truth. So that hasn't been fully accomplished, right? He's done a perfect job with the Vedas, the Puranas, and other literatures, but that essential point hasn't come up. Vedanta Sutra has been written philosophically, Mahabharata has been written culturally, but it still missed the point. Right? It's not that they're not authority; they're still just as authority. But the point is it didn't make it clear.
So satisfied means someone is in goodness, and looking for happiness means more in passion.
Not more in passion, in passion.
Passion, yeah.
It's not more in passion, it's just passion. Right? Ignorance means you don't know the difference between up and down. You know, right and wrong. You know, you'll say something that's right, you know. Something that's wrong has to be right. You know, in other words, what are issues? Issues are always you take something you shouldn't be doing and make a whole scene that you should have the right to do it. You know, does that make sense? That's the mode of ignorance. Because there's something you want to gain from that mode of passion. Mode of goodness, this is my duty, I perform it. Like that. Because you'll end up having to do it anyway. But you might as well learn to do it when you're young, when you can do it nicely and all that. And when you're old, and, you know, and renounce the world, then you can give up and move on, rather than now you finally, you know, renounce that mode of passion, so now you're comfortable with goodness. So now at 50, 60 years old, you're willing to do your duties. Right? You know, the third marriage, you know, it's working out. You know, it's all happening. You know, like that. So that's the whole thing. So great, it's been accomplished, but, you know, it's just, you know, 30 years, you know, 40 years a bit late. It should have happened earlier. Then, you know, at that point, you would have been able to move on to the next stage. But at least now they finally, you know, accepted the role of Grihastha. Great, you know. But it should be Vanaprastha, and, you know, it should be kind of a little more along the line. But, you know, it works.
Sure.
You know, like that. This satisfaction has to be searched out beyond matter. So that's the point, is the satisfaction can only be in connection with the Vedas and only in connection with transcendence.
This matter.
Mattering this matter.
No, but thinking this matter over very besides deeply. I got that one because I was trying to get matter because meaning matter. Then it's matter means subject. And then I ran into besides. Okay, thinking this matter over very deeply, he considered, I have undergone all kinds of strict disciplinary vows. I have unpretentiously worshipped the Vedas, the spiritual master, and the altar of sacrifice. I have perfectly followed all regulative injunctions. I have thoroughly expounded the principles of religion by presenting the Mahabharata. Right, thoroughly expounded means everything's covered there. Yet all of these, like Manu covers, thoroughly the religion, but you don't see, except for one or two places, examples of application. Right? How that would apply, why it would apply, how would that be relate in your interaction with people in your life? Mahabharata does that. Right? So that's why then you can say it's thoroughly presenting religion, because then you see the example of why. You can think, yeah, I should do this because Bhima did like this. You know?
Yes.
Does that make sense? Or Arjuna did like this. So then that's the whole point. But otherwise, you can just say, Manu says this.
Yeah. Right?
Yet all of these accomplishments have left me feeling incomplete. Could it be that I did not specifically preach the value of unalloyed devotional service to the Supreme Lord? This alone is the means of satisfying oneself and the Lord as well. Just as Vyasa was regretting his defects in this way, his spiritual master Narad Muni came to him. Footnote 39. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains in his commentary to 1.4.32, lacking complete knowledge and being dissatisfied are impossible for Vyas, since he is an avatar of the Lord. Therefore, it should be understood that these conditions were strongly produced by Krishna himself in order to manifest the Bhagavatam, the crest jewel of all the scriptures, which is non-different from him. Similarly, even Balaram's knowledge became covered by Krishna for the beauty of the pastimes in bewildering Brahma. The Bhagavatam became manifest, right? In other words, he's the Supreme Lord, but at the same time as Krishna is the original Supreme Lord, can even bewilder any of his expansions, for his own pastimes. So now because Swayam Krishna is going to appear as Bhagavatam, right? Then, he may pull these kind of tricks, right? The Bhagavatam became manifest by the instructions of Narada. However, it should be understood that even the chief goal of human endeavor, liberation, is achieved only by bhakti and not by any other method.
Yes.
So, in other words, it's connected with the Lord. And we see here that Vyasadeva, he's already working out that, could it be that I did not specifically preach the value of unalloyed devotional service unto the Supreme Lord? In other words, he preached it. You'll find it in all the literatures. There's a few verses in every literature that explain it. But it's not specific because people won't notice it, right? There's so many things you can do and there's one thing you shouldn't do. Then the tendency is you just do and, there's more I can do and less that I shouldn't do, so you just ignore that I shouldn't do it.
Yes.
Does that make sense? That's how it works.
Standard.
So, therefore, it's not specific. So he's already thinking, maybe this is it. Right? So it's a doubt. He's bewildered. He's dissatisfied. So now, as soon as he gets to that point, then that's when Narad Muni shows up. Because now the actual solution has been, when you actually want to know,
yes.
That's when Krishna reveals, the spiritual master.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Yes.
So he can say that he himself understood the reason for his dissatisfaction.
Yes. But it still needs to be confirmed. This is his thought. Maybe it's that. Because his point is I've done everything. I'm perfectly following everything. I'm perfectly documenting everything. I'm even combining all that together perfectly into the Mahabharata. Right, because it's not that, I wrote the Mahabharata, but because, the storyline, I wanted to make it a little bit more dynamic, so we dropped off this and dropped off that, and this part didn't actually fit that actor, which I thought would be the best one for it, and that one for this one, and that script writer, actually he's a Buddhist, but, so then all this together, and so then we came up with something that has absolutely nothing to do with it, right? So it's that he says totally it's there, completely,
So then it's the point is you know, Dharma has been established, all the different rules and regulations, the vratas, everything has been done. But pure unalloyed devotion has not been specifically preached. So he's thinking, maybe that's it. But then the spiritual master comes and then, you know, that will be confirmed. That that's the actual. So Krishna arranged this, you know, because it's, he's Vyasadeva, so it's, you know, his pastime. So he himself bewilders himself so that, you know, that this can be done. So otherwise, if he just figures it out and does it, then it's not as fun. Right? Plus, then there's always the thing is that here, just in our own personal life, right? You know, I'm, my sadhana is great, my chanting is great, everything's great, my service, you know, I've developed it, you know, the temple's going fabulous, the preaching's going on, the books, everything's perfect, so why aren't I satisfied? Because maybe I'm focusing too much on the technicalities of it and not on pleasing Krishna by the same activity. Right? That's the whole point, because he's done everything perfect. Otherwise, is the thing. No, unless everything's perfect, then we can't be Krishna conscious. Here, Vyasadeva shows even if it's perfect, we still can't. It's not about Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is independent. You know, oh, we can't preach until we have a big temple and we have lots of money and this and no, it doesn't matter. You know, Prabhupada started 26 Second Avenue. You don't get at that time more of a dive than that. You know, I mean, it's like. You know, even in the slum, you don't have, you know, alcoholic bums sleeping in front of your door. Right? So this is lower than that. You know? That's where he started from. So it's, it has nothing to do with, you know, and what did he, and who did he have to work with?
You know?
Yeah. The ones that were stable enough to stand up, right? So, you know what I'm saying? That's where it starts. So it has nothing to do with, that's very, very important. Otherwise, we'll take it that, no, the facility, only if we have this, you know, you know, you're able to do that, yeah, you can do that in your temple because you have that facility.
Yes.
You know? No, it has nothing to do with that. It's just simply this point, specifically preaching unalloyed devotional service. That's all.
So the facility follows the consciousness, not the other way around.
Yes. Means the point is you have facility, use it. You don't have facility, you still preach. The point is you preach with what you have. You know what I'm saying? So that's... Srila Vyasadeva immediately got up to respectfully worship Narad, as one would worship Brahma, the creator. Then he seated his spiritual master comfortably, 14 through 33. By his despondency, Srila Vyasadeva teaches all conditioned souls an important lesson. A living entity can be truly happy only by pure devotional service. Karma and jnana will not help. No activity, even compiling transcendental masterpieces, as shown by Vyasadeva's example, can drive away the dejection caused by alienation from the Lord's sweetness. Right? So it doesn't matter how expert. Like, so this modern thing of, you know, it's all about being professional, being this and that, you know, all the success. It's nice as tools, but it still will not give one satisfaction in Krishna consciousness. So if you're not satisfied in Krishna consciousness, don't go to a success seminar and think that will make you successful. No, go and hear Srimad Bhagavatam, the Association of Vaishnavas. That will make you satisfied. It has nothing to do with the other. Right? You know, I got into Krishna conscious, I got into this, you know, had a plan, I worked at it and that, did that for so many years, and now in, you know, when you're older, about 50, then it didn't quite work out, so maybe I was doing the wrong thing, I should change that into another technical kind of thing. No, the whole point is it's just pure devotional service. Right? It's not what you're doing. Right? It's how it's done. So it's not about how expert it is, how well done it is, because there's all the examples in the Puranas and the histories about people who are not that great and successful, but devotionally they're satisfied and pleasing the Lord.
Yes.
Like that.
So whereas you don't have to learn how to love yourself to move forward.
I mean, how do you do that? You use a mirror? What's the method? You know? You know, give yourself a good hug, group hug.
Yeah.
how does this work?
I heard it as on the Vyasa Sanya. So.
Gotta love yourself.
Yes.
But who is the self?
Yes.
You know, the soul, and what is that? That's not the complete understanding. A servant of God, and then what does that mean, servant of God? You know, that means serving with devotion. Okay, now that's something worth loving. But the point is that love is directed at Krishna. Krishna directs his love at you. You know, it just comes because people are so self-centered that it's not working nicely. So in other words, it is a phrase that means, even though you're so self-centered and if things aren't going well, you're not coming out to be the perfection, the superhuman that you expect yourself to deservingly be, don't be dejected. You should be comfortable with whatever position you're in and move forward with that. That would be the translation of love yourself.
Yes, yes.
What does that mean, love yourself? What was that? Okay, I can't even remember.
These terms. Up to date.
Up to date, Up to what date, carry around one of those big, Arabian dates in your pocket. Up to date. That, what I'm saying? In other words, it carries a particular connotation, so you have to see what is the intent. In other words, the intent is, relax, don't sit around being in the mode of ignorance, thinking I'm so useless. Just whatever position you're in, engage yourself in the Lord's service. That's the intent.
Yes.
And the words used then will be, generally quite regional. like that.
Yes.
Okay. Well, material wealth and sense gratification are also not suitable remedies for healing the suffering conditioned soul. So he's used all the higher ones. He's used all dharma and up, and is not satisfied. And it's already been proven that below dharma, definitely you're not going to get any satisfaction, right? Duryodhana, he got the whole world. He wasn't supposed to, and he got it. He was never satisfied. We never hear of a moment where Duryodhana is sitting with Shakuni and Karna and Dushasana, and he's saying, "I feel so satisfied now. I'm just, this is perfection, right?" Do we ever hear? No, because it can't work. So, okay. So, material wealth and sense gratification are also not suitable remedies for healing the suffering conditioned soul. This was pointed out by Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita 2:8. I can find no means to drive away this grief, which is drying up my senses. I will not be able to dispel it, even if I win a prosperous, unrivaled kingdom on earth, with sovereignty like that of the demigods in heaven. Right? Prosperous, unrivaled, and sovereignty like the demigods. Right? Perfect combination, right? Yeah. So he's saying that won't do it. So the point is material can't do that. In the next chapter, Sri Narada will emphasize the futility of karma and jnana in solving the real problems in life. 1.5.12. Knowledge of self-realization, even though free from all material affinity, does not look well if devoid of a conception of the infallible God. What then is the use of fruitive activities which are naturally painful from the very beginning and transient by nature if they are not utilized for the devotional service of the Lord? Because right? That's what the Vedic literatures are defining. Right? So the point is you're supposed to catch it, it's supposed to be about the Lord, but to do that you would have to emphasize that. And he hasn't. He just simply took it for granted. They basically should understand that because he's mentioned it. And then learn the technique from the Shastra, how to use it. Right. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purports to 1.4.31.32, the cause of the dissatisfaction which is being felt by Srila Vyasadeva is expressed herein in his own words. This was felt for the normal condition of the living being in the devotional service of the Lord. Unless one is fixed in the normal condition of service, neither the Lord nor the living entity can become fully satisfied. Right? So if we're dissatisfied, because the Lord's dissatisfied.
If the Lord's happy, we're happy. Mm-hmm. Right? So if we're dissatisfied, it means he's dissatisfied.
Yeah. Right.
This defect was felt by him when Narad Muni, his spiritual master, reached him. It is described as follows. Although Vyasadeva was an empowered divinity, he still felt dissatisfaction because in none of his works were the transcendental activities of the Lord properly explained. It means it mentions, it refers, like this, the ideas you should catch. Oh, so this is the essence, go look for it, look up these things, you know, become inquisitive. But most people are reading a particular shastra for that particular purpose. You know, they're reading Manu for law, not for pure devotional service. They're reading Ayurveda, Gandharva Veda, not for pure devotional service, you know, but for you know, fine arts or for health.
Mm.
Right?
Yes.
Right. Okay.
So, so that's why there are no healthy health freaks.
Yeah. The inspiration was infused by Sri Krishna directly in the heart of Vyasadeva, and thus he felt the vacuum as explained above. It is definitely expressed herewith that without the transcendental loving service of the Lord, everything is void. But in the transcendental service of the Lord, everything is tangible without any separate attempt at fruitive work or empiric philosophical speculation. Right, so even here we're talking about philosophical speculation, right? Because we make the difference between mental speculation and philosophical. Right? Mental just means the own mind, what you want to think about. It's not based on the scriptures.
Right.
It's just what you feel is necessary. Right. Well, philosophical speculation means it's based on the scriptures, so it's an actual authorized process.
Yes.
But now he mentions here, empiric philosophical speculation, just is separated from devotional philosophical speculation.
Yes.
The answers to question 7, what is the pious message of Srimad Bhagavatam as spoken by Srila Sukadeva Goswami, given by Sutta Goswami in chapter 4, can be summarized as follows. The Bhagavatam alone describes devotional service and the transcendental pastimes of Lord Krishna. It is Srila Vyasadeva's special arrangement so the unfortunate souls trapped by Kali can approach the ultimate achievement, devotional service, which alone can bring complete satisfaction to the self. One cannot feel true satisfaction until one engages in direct devotional service, as it is described in Srimad Bhagavatam. Even though one may understand and become purified by assimilating all the knowledge of the Vedas and the Mahabharata, 1433. So, here he started with the Vedas. He's compiled the Vedas. So that's your essential, you know, the basis of all knowledge, the all authority. And he's not satisfied, right? So then he does an essential work of the Upanishads, right? And then he does an essential work of the, you know, means of the Brahmanas, which is your, you know, the Dharma Shastras and the Dharma Sutras, Griha Sutras, that line. You know, of the Mahabharata, right? But at the same time, he puts in there, even the combines it with the essence of the Upanishads, just the Gita, right? Though it's only 700 out of 100,000 verses. But still, his point is it's there. But so, he's still not satisfied, right? So the point is there must be, it's not the techniques, the knowledge, the skills, but it's the devotion that's actually going to work. So that needs to be directly explained, yes.
As in Gita, austerity of mind, as in satisfaction, does that mean doing one's duties?
Yes, it means there can be the satisfaction of the mind you can get by situating yourself in goodness by following your prescribed duties in that. But the problem is it won't satisfy the soul.
Mm.
Right? So even though you're doing that, because Vyasadeva, he didn't say he was dissatisfied in his performance of his vows and his vratas and his duties.
Yes.
He said it just is an overall dissatisfaction because he feels that the devotional service to the Lord was not brought out.
Yes.
In the next chapter, Srila Vyasadeva's spiritual master, Narada Muni, will confirm that the reason for Vyasadeva's despondency was that he did not specifically preach the value of unalloyed devotional service unto the Supreme Lord, As a remedy, Narad Muni will recommend the compilation of Srimad Bhagavatam. Again, it says, did not specifically. It doesn't mean he's not mentioned. It just means specifically pointing out that this is it. Because his idea is that if that's it, people may not perform their duties and they'll get distracted. But still, you have to establish that. Okay, then 84, you have your questions, an essay question. And then chapter 5. Narad Muni's instructions on Srimad Bhagavatam for Vyasadeva, Pratigya. Srimad Bhagavatam, we just started that today? The fourth chapter?
No.
We
started yesterday.
At
this rate, we keep going. By the time we get to the last, 12th canto, we'll be doing them, 30 seconds a chapter.
That was a short chapter.
Yeah, it was short, yes.
This next one's a lot longer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, okay.
Now we're getting down, so. Then the last one, the study guide will say, "Ach." And then
essay questions.
Then there'll be the essay question. Explain the importance of A.
Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur could probably make some elaborate.
Yeah, of course. Well, A is the Supreme Personality, Radha.
Is the first of the Vishnu
Jalavakshana
of the ancients.
Yeah. I think it also causes Brahma. So then you also have, the whole primary creation and Brahma and so like that. So yeah, you could.
You could do this. Okay.
Okay. Pratigya, Srimad Bhagavatam 1589. Yeah, and then the living entities, because Brahma then creates all the things, so then...
He's the topmost living entity.
Yeah, he's Vidhi, so all the rules, so you could get everything from...
Ah. Can we wait a couple of years? And then...
After we finish Vedanta Sutras, stuff.
Yeah.
Sri Narad said, "You have not actually broadcast the sublime and spotless glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That philosophy which does not satisfy the transcendental senses of the Lord is considered worthless. Although great sage, you have very broadly described the four principles beginning with the religious performances. You have not described the glories of the Supreme Personality, Vasudeva." From the purport to 159, the prompt diagnosis of Sri Narada is at once declared. The root cause of the despondency of Vyasadeva was his deliberate avoidance of glorifying the Lord in his various editions of the Puranas. He was certainly, as a matter of course, given descriptions of the glories of the Lord, Sri Krishna, but not as many as given to religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and salvation. Right? These four items are by far inferior to engagement in the devotional service of the Lord. Right? So, in other words, Dharma, Artha, Karma, Moksha has been spoken about. And yes, why is he writing like that? Because it will attract the people. Because his idea is the people of Kali Yuga will get distracted, so they should follow the Vedic culture, because that's what's useful in devotional service. But not emphasizing devotional service out of fear they would not take up the culture, then he basically avoided it. Right? He didn't specifically. It's not that he didn't mention it, but he didn't specifically. Therefore, then it came out as then Narad Muni points it out, this is why he's dissatisfied. Right? So we see the acharyas and the commentaries, like we said, they speak exactly, they tell what's reality, what's illusion, but they present it in a nice way so that who that you're speaking to can appreciate it. Right? Like that. That's the thing. But because Vyasadeva already tried the other. He already tried giving the stuff that they want to hear and kind of like skirting around the devotional activity. And he wasn't satisfied, and no one else is satisfied. And the Lord's not satisfied. Right? So it's already been tried. It's thought that it's a new thing. But this is, 5,000 years ago, Vyasadeva himself already tried it. And it didn't work.
Yes.
Right? That, yes. Okay. So,
So that's the point. Dharmartha, karma, moksha are very useful, but they aren't what will make satisfaction. Use in the Lord, devotional service is the only thing that will make you satisfied. So the forms you use are dharmartha, karma, and moksha, engaged in the Lord's service. Yes.
So, but I mean, we're preaching based on where we are, time, place, and circumstances.
Yes.
So some cultures have difficulty with the Supreme Lord as a concept.
You mean like China?
Or Denmark.
Denmark?
Yeah. Second most atheistic place in the world, I think.
Sweden?
No, that's number one.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Sweden's number one.
Yeah, Denmark.
Therefore, the bridge, is that why they're...
Yeah.
Means they wouldn't make a bridge to Norway or Finland because they're not atheistic.
Yeah, they're not atheistic enough. Yeah, exactly. Vietnam is number three, I think.
Vietnam's number three. That's too big a bridge.
Yeah. But they
try and hold.
Tunnel.
Start from Vietnam side, yeah.
Anyways. So how to deal with that? Because the
point is you know, that the concept of supreme is already there. The concept of service is already there. So the point is the living entity by natural does service. And the topmost of whatever anybody's looking for is the supreme.
Yes.
So then, naturally, then that desire for the supreme and that nature of service, those all go together. That's how you find satisfaction. So at least get that far.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? My point is that in the I'm only making these comments on soft preaching. The principle that is trying to be obtained is good. But the idea where you actually avoid the actual philosophy, get on the philosophy, that's a problem. Because otherwise, then what are they getting? You know, unless you're really giving them great, dharma, artha, karma, or moksha. And generally, devotees aren't that studied in that either. You know, so then you kind of throw out a little yoga, a little, new agey, a little success, a little all that thrown together, and use the right terms and all that. And then, it comes out great.
Yes.
But the thing is, so is it that you have to love your actual self or love what you think is yourself?
That's
because the soul is pure, transcendental, full of all good qualities. So, what's not to love about that? So if you're not loving, that means it's your conditioning you're not loving. So therefore you should love your what you think is yourself or
exactly.
What are we loving? It's like that. McDonald's are loving it, but does that make sense?
Actually?
So that's the thing is, the intent is nice, but yet one has to be very, very careful that one doesn't get distracted, like Vyasadeva did, And no one's giving more of on the material platform, a more complete system than he's giving. So there's no way, look at it technically, let's say on the mundane platform. Okay, now, who we would say today is, in a good way, a possibility, taking Vyasadeva's instructions to heart, the Mahabharata, these different literatures, and applying them in their life, are successful on the material platform. Who's doing that? The Indian community. And they're doing as well, if not better, than anybody in the world, I mean, you can't say that there's a particular non-Indian community, other than other Asians, who are doing that well. You can say there's families who are doing well, but you can't say there's communities who are doing well. Maybe the Boston Brahmins, but, they're getting less and less with time. It's not an expanding community. So they're using it, and they're just using the mundane side of it.
Yes.
With a little bit of just like he, tells something about God consciousness, and they're something God conscious.
Yes.
They're not specifically, and they're doing well.
Yeah.
So it works.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Because otherwise, then you're just kind of, preaching Hinduism.
Yes.
Without doing a good job.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Thank you.
Chapter 5 summarizes questions and answers. Question 8, 1.5.1-4, is asked by Narad Muni to Vyasadeva. After compiling the Mahabharata, full of all kinds of Vedic knowledge, and presenting the philosophy of impersonal Brahman, are you satisfied by identifying the body and mind as objects of self-realization? Because that's what you're using. In other words, that is being what's used. Instead of focusing on self-realization, you're focusing on the means that you're using. Does that make sense?
Yes.
You know, so that's the question 9. 1.5.5-7. Question 9 also serves as the answer to question 8. Right? Because Narad Muni is very expert at rhetorical questions that actually are instructions. Right? Yes. There's one section in the Mahabharata where he comes to visit Yudhishthira Maharaj. This is after the Shabha is made, and you know he's doing quite well this time before the gambling match and all that. And so then he asks him, I don't know, like 30, 40 questions, maybe more, like that. But each question is an instruction. But it's in the question form. Like, you know, are you, you know, properly and on time, you know, and appropriately taking, you know, giving salaries to all of your, you know, people who are working for you? Right? So what was that?
Yes.
It was an instruction. You know, so he asks all these, and it's not that Yudhishthira afterwards it goes to and answers it. You know, he says, yes, I'm trying to do my duties the best I can, like this.
Yes,
so Narad Muni's quite good at this. One should appreciate it. Yes.
Means Narad Muni already read Mahabharata?
Who's this guy with the meat?
I mean, he knew whatever Vyasadeva compiled, he saw it.
Basically, everybody's there because it, how do you say? I have one canto, you know, gets into this. Right, so, Janamejaya, who is Parikit's son, was doing a snake sacrifice to destroy the snakes because Takshika was misbehaved. The curse is that he'll be bit by Takshika, right? Parikit Maharaj, you know, within 7 days, right? So that's all is the curse. But then when it's the time and Takshika's going there, his father, Kasyapa, is also going there, right? And Kasyapa, and then Takshika asks, you know, because he's in the form of a Brahmin, he asks, you know, why were you going? He says, I'm going to see Parikit because he'll be bit by Takshika and I have the, you know, mantras to counteract the poison. So then the Brahmin reveals, I'm Takshika, and says, you know, my poison is so powerful you can't do this. Right? So then he says, yes. So he says, okay, let's see. You know, I'll bite this big banyan tree, monster banyan tree, and let's see if you can revive it. So he bites it, and it turns into a little pile of ash. It's like that. The poison is, you know, because poison is fire. It's so great that it just bursts, and, you know, it just becomes ashes. And then Kasyapa takes a little handful of that and chants mantra and then puts it down and the seedling comes up and within a moment it turns back into the full tree. Right? And so then Takshika says, why are you going there? He says, I'm going for, you know, to please the emperor, you know, his benefit, and he'll give a nice donation. So he says, I'll give you double. Good, okay, yeah. So I'll give you double. And so Kasyapa is not thinking, well, this is not good. But then he sits down in meditation and understand actually his life has been shortened by the curse. He's not supposed to live anymore. Like that. And so therefore, you know, going to try to revive him, because you can, like, that tree is supposed to be living. Takshika is not supposed to buy this, so therefore he can revive it. So therefore he takes the dakshin and goes. So Janamejaya's point is that it was not necessary to do that. He was only supposed to come and bite. That's it.
Now he's worried about his own reputation. If he's bitten and then his father comes and brings him back to life, then he'll be the laughing stock. So it was all about prestige. Therefore, it wasn't that he was doing his duty. Therefore, he's punishable. Right? And there's, you know, other stories like that, but we won't get into. And so he's doing the snake sacrifice, and it's going along. And they, you know, already so many, you know, millions and billions of snakes have fallen into the fire because they call them by their groups, because they all have names. So when they call Takshaka, just as they're about to call Takshaka, then the, how you say, nephew of, you know, the snakes, Takshaka's nephew. In other words, Takshaka's sister's son, Astika, then he's been born just to stop this sacrifice. Right? So, problem is, it just keeps going. Why is there the sacrifice and they're cursed? Why is it he's the one that can stop it? All this kind of jazz like that. So, that's the Mahabharata.
That's a good story.
That's why it's immediately, hey, yeah.
Yeah, it's an amazing story.
Yeah. And then, what do you call it? Women, Shudras, friends of the twice born. Here we are. You say the snakes are cursed by the mother. Why are they cursed by the mother?
It's amazing.
There's 200 pages to explain why there's a snake sacrifice in Mahabharata. So, then Astika comes, and then because he's so, you know, his qualities are so great, he's blessing the king and all that, the king wants to give him a benediction. And he asks for permission, but the priests say, no, not until we've called Takshaka. Right? Because everybody knows the sacrifice will be stopped by a Brahmin. So their point is, call Takshaka, you know, when he's, you know, then you can give the blessings, right? So they call Takshaka, he's being called by the mantras, so he's falling into the fire. But then he says, okay, let's give up. Okay, he says, now you can give your boon. And so he says, you know, stay. And Takshaka gets stuck in the space. So he's being pulled by the mantras and pushed by Astika's power. So he's just kind of hung there in space, you know, not knowing how this is going to work out, right? And so then he says, you know, for my relatives, I'd like to stop the snake sacrifice. So the Sadasvas say they approve of it, that it's a good thing, right? Because the snakes have been, you know, you've gotten rid of so many snakes because it was Brahma's desire, because that's how the curse could take place, because Brahma sanctioned it, because they just go and bite people and like this. But at the same time is then, you know, there's a concern by Vasuki that the race goes on. And so then the arrangement is made. So the Sadasyas, they know this, right? The Sadasyas are, you know, senior Brahmins in that aren't conducting the ritual but are there for, you know, auspiciousness and discussing, you know, philosophy and all these kind of things. So when the sacrifice thus is concluded, all the charity is given, but everything's there, all the Sadasyas are there, all great personalities. So then Janamejaya asks Vaishampayana to relate the Mahabharata. So the Mahabharata is spoken there. So Narad Muni happens to be one of the Sadasyas. Right? And Vyasadeva is there because he taught Janamejaya. But this is the first time it's been published publicly. Right? So then Narad Muni would have already heard it. Right, because in the Vedic time, publishing meant it was spoken. Right? Now it has to be actually, you know, much cheaper. They save on paper, right? That's sustainable. Now this is sustainable technology.
Okay.
So he would have already heard it. So no, he didn't read it. Okay. So that was it. Mahabharata-esque answer. Okay. So question 9 also serves as the answer to question 8. It is asked by Vyasa to Narad Muni. In spite of these accomplishments you mention, I am not satisfied and therefore ask you to find out the deficiency in me. Right? So are you satisfied by, you know, having written all these Vedic literatures and, so, you know, and compiled them in such a way that people identify the body and mind as actually objects of self-realization rather than instruments of self-realization? Right? Answer, Narad Muni answers in 159-40. So basically much of the rest of the chapter. Adhyaya Prakashika. In the fifth chapter, showing the futility of karma and jnana, Narad teaches Vyasadeva about bhakti with its chief component, kirtan. Because kirtan is always there. We also remember it's because, like we say, it's written in. Narad, in Manusamhita, then it's very, very clearly said that a Brahman who knows, even if he knows nothing else, but he's chants japa, right? You know, coming in the authorized line, he knows all the Vedas. Right? And after the whole thing on Prayaschitta, you know, about all the bad things that you could do in the universe, then it's simply by chanting Hare Krishna or hearing the Lord's glories in the association of the Vaishnavas, you know, great saintly persons, then you can be freed from all sin. Right? Does that make sense? So it's already mentioned there that kirtan is the actual most powerful, most efficient process of anything, because of all the different varnas the Brahman is taught, and of the Brahman's duties, then the study of the Veda is taught. But of that, kirtan or japa is the top.
Mm, yes.
You understand? Manu's already mentioned that. But who have you ever heard say this? Who have you ever heard understood this? And a lot of devotees have dabbled in Manu or dabbled in Dharmashastra. You know what I'm saying? Yes. But it's not said. Why not? Because the way it's written, you wouldn't notice it. Mm. You know, just like we said, there's all the things about animal sacrifice and yajna and this and that, showing how it's okay. But at the end it says, better you're vegetarian your whole life. You'll get more benefit. But how many people catch that? So a lot of people catch, a lot of people don't.
Yes.
That's the whole point, is it's not caught.
You find for what you're looking for.
Yeah. And then also at the end of the whole first six chapters, he says the essence are these 10 points, which are all character. And then, you know, near the end of the, the next six chapters on Varna Dharma, then again he reiterates the same point, but reducing it to 5. That these are the essential, because these are the ones that will get you the manifestation of the other aspects. In other words, the 10 included the 5. But the point is he's saying these 5 are the ones that will get you the other 5. So, are these caught? You know, is it caught in the introduction where it says the Brahmins ask Brahma, we want to hear from you about Varnashram because you know how it connects to the Supreme Lord for developing devotion to the Lord. So right in the introduction, it's set stated.
Mm.
Understand? So now we've given so many points in Manu out of, I think it's 2,000 verses.
Mm.
Right? So here's, you know, 5-6 verses that show very essential points. But that's not what's caught. The only thing, every time I hear devotees talking Manu, it's all about how people lose fingers if they do something wrong. You know? Or to misapply it, you know, to give very heavy punishments to people that they feel are immoral.
Yes.
That's the only way I've ever heard devotees use it. I've never heard any other way. So, what about this devotional thing? What about the chanting? What about, that's more powerful than anything. What about, you know, in a sense? So that's Narad Muni's point. So are you happy that instead of taking the body and mind and using it as an instrument, they've actually made it the goal? When I do this stuff with my body and mind, then I'm a good person. Rather than when I engage these things of the body and mind in the Lord's service, then I'm a good person. It's very different. Right? Does that make sense? That's the whole point. Okay. Narad Muni, fully understanding the situation, inquires from Vyas about the root cause of Vyasa's unhappiness and hints at the solution. Srila Vyasadeva requests his spiritual master to reveal the cause of his despondency. Narada informs Vyas about the importance of directly describing the glorious pastimes of Krishna.
Right? So even these elements where we're just discussing the position of the Supreme, that's just a step. In other words, bringing people to understand the Vedantic element of Brahman and Supreme, or those who are, you know, a little more pious, who can appreciate God as the controller and the judge and the, you know, creator, maintainer, destroyer, like this, then, but still at some point you have to come to, one will only be satisfied if you're talking about the actual direct pastimes of Krishna, right? So therefore, that soft part, that preliminary part, is getting into the Brahman or Paramatma level. If it's less than that, it doesn't even count as spiritual. You know, and so no one will get satisfaction from that. You just may give them another idea that they can become satisfied when they won't. You know, people are always finding something new, something different. You know, you get tired of one sport, you find another one. Or one restaurant, you find another one. Right? So that's what goes on. So that's not making any satisfaction. So just giving them more material, that's not going to work. You have to give them about the absolute. Right? And then from that platform, then you go to, because like it says, the impersonalists, they, you understand about the universal form and all that, because then they get accustomed to that kind of concept of this form. Then from that you take them into, does that make sense?
Yes.
So that would be the step. But the Supreme, everybody's looking for. Yes. Right? So his point is, unless it's directly describing, then you won't actually be satisfied. So at some point it needs to get there. He also warns him of the spiritual dangers to ordinary readers that could arise when they come in contact with Vyasa's previous writings, which only indirectly hint at the glories of the Lord. Right? It's just like devotees get distracted by mundane subject as much as they get distracted by Vedic. Like how many, you know, full-time, you know, really serious preaching astrologers do you know in the society? How about Ayurvedic practitioners? Mm-hmm. How about Vastu? Mm-hmm. How about, you understand, you take any of these sciences and that, or the guy that does the samskars for the temple, you know, and makes his living that way. You understand? Yes. They're all on the edge.
Yes.
It's all business. Mm-hmm. So that's the whole point. That's what Narada Muni's saying.
Yes.
He says, he warns them of the spiritual dangers to ordinary readers, because they'll say, it's Vedic, so it's spiritual. No, it's Vedic. It can be nicely engaged in the spiritual, but if you don't engage it directly in the spiritual, it's not spiritualized.
Yes.
And just kind of doing it is not enough. That's why the Bhagavatam's saying it has to be pure devotion. It can't be karma yoga or jnana yoga. That's not going to give satisfaction. It's a stepping stone. And it's great if you start there, fine. But don't think that now I'm situated, now everything's perfect. Is that so? You know, let alone non-devotees. Right? Narad then tells Vyasa about the secure position of a devotee serving Krishna. Right? That's all. After describing the Lord as both impersonal as well personal, Narada asked Vyasa to vividly and directly describe the pastimes of Krishna. So he also shows that progression, that Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan are three aspects of one thing, but the others are expansions of Bhagavan. So Bhagavan is the root. So you have to get there. But it's fine going through that progression. The difficulty is devotees know mundane, they know Bhagavan, they don't know in between. So therefore, then trying to make that step, how do you make the step? You know, because they're always afraid of they're going to lose them. Prabhupada didn't worry about it, he just spoke. And who stayed? Now we'll talk with them. Who leaves? Hey, it happens.
Yes.
Like that.
Yes.
You know, the uptown Swami never made any devotees. He tells Vyasa how in his previous birth as a Shudra, Narada became fixed in the confidential devotional service of the Lord through the association of great Bhaktivedantas. Narada glorifies working in Krishna's service while remembering his glories. Right. So working for Krishna, remembering Krishna. Right? After glorifying transcendental sound, Narada then requests Vyas to directly glorify the Lord's activities for the benefit of suffering humanity. Shloka Anusharana. Summary of verses. Verses 1 through 7. Narada inquires about Vyasa's despondency. Verses 8 to 22. Narada reveals the importance of describing Krishna's pastimes. Verses 23 to 31. Narada tells of his previous life. Verses 32 to 40. Narada advises Vyas to reveal in his writings the principle of hearing about the Lord and working for him. Right? Like that. So this hearing and chanting and doing your service in connection to the Lord. So we see it's what Gita, what we learned in Gita. Just the difference is coming from, it means in other words, if you look from Bhagavatam back at Gita, what's the direction you see the process mentioned?
Giving up those things?
Yes. In other words, you know, that sarva dharma parityaja, right? Because if you're looking from Bhagavatam back into Gita, then you're going to see it from pure devotional service. Therefore, you're engaging karma, jnana, and jnana in pure devotional service.
Yeah.
Yes. Right? But the practice starts at the beginning of Gita. Right? Yes. With Arjuna's despondency. Yes. Right? So a lot happens with despondency. Mm-hmm. Things get spoken when there's despondency. Things happen. Right? So we see that...
It's a motivator.
Yes, it's a motivator. So we see the same thing as Arjuna is under Krishna's yoga maya, and now Vyasa is under Krishna's yoga maya. Right? So then you get Gita spoken, and now you have Bhagavatam.
Yes.
Mm. I see a pattern. Yeah. Anybody call it? There's a methodology.
Method in the madness?
No, not that one. There's always things that that's it. They study, they see that there's
a mode of operation.
Yeah. Verses 1 through 7. Narada inquires about Vyasa's despondency. In this section, Narada Muni, fully understanding the situation, inquires from Vyasa about the root cause of Vyasa's unhappiness and hints at the solution. Srila Vyasadeva requests the spiritual master Narada to reveal the cause of its despondency. Right? So, catch this means, in other words, from the Adhyaya Prakashika, right? You're giving the essence of the whole chapter, kind of an overall. So those points, those are the particulars of these sections. Right?
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So it all fits together very nicely. That's the point of the consistency. If it always goes back and always has that same connections, then it makes it very easy to appreciate. And what's repeated is important.
Yes.
It's repeated. Just as Vyas was regretting. Just as Vyasa was regretting his defects in this way, his spiritual master, Narada Muni, came to him. Srila Vyasadeva immediately got up to respectfully worship Narada, and after doing so, he seated him comfortably. Narada Muni then addressed Vyasa, knowing all about his disciple's defect. He was smiling mildly. Footnote 40. In his purports to 151, Srila Prabhupada explains the meaning of Narada's smile. Quote, Narada was smiling because he knew well the great sage Veda Vyas and the cause of his disappointment. As he will explain gradually, Vyasadeva's disappointment was due to insufficiency in presenting the science of devotional service. Footnote continues to the next page. Wow. Okay. Lord Krishna also smiled for a similar reason when he spoke his initial instructions to Arjuna in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita. Like his first, he just kind of like, you know, throws it out and, you know, plays with it. Not exactly plays, but just make him aware of the situation rather than just the emotion, but the whole context in which they're presenting it. Narada said, my dear son of Parasara, have you become satisfied by encouraging others to identify the body and mind with the self? Because he's thinking, well, I didn't do this, so are you satisfied with that? So therefore, no, that's the actual. So he's pointing out that exactly what he had thought, but it's just a thought, and he's not so much, I didn't do this. You know, it's like, okay, I wrote all that, that's fine, but I didn't directly describe the Lord. But he's pointing it out as, you wrote all this, so are you satisfied with this, that if people will take their mind and body as the object of self-realization? So he's even
pointing out. That, you know what I'm saying? Because we'll go through very nicely. You know, it's like that. Yeah, I wrote all that. That's great, but there's a little more.
Yeah.
Right.
The deficiency.
Yeah, yeah, like that. But here he's pointing out that little more is because you wrote this other in this other way. You know what I'm saying?
It can be a distraction.
Yeah.
Not pulling any punches.
No, he means, in other words, he's very, very nicely presenting so that even that what's mentioned would be, means it's just like Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, right? So he knew all the verses. So when his brother-in-law pointed them out, Then it's something that can be discussed. It's not that he doesn't know the verses. Like someone who, like you said, knows Manu nicely, knows all those verses. So they'll get into, you know, this and that, and you point out, no, but this is the case, so what about this? You know?
Yes.
So then it's like, okay, but they would tend to interpret it in their own way. But at least they've accepted it because of how it's presented, the context and everything. Because it's just like it's going along, you just kind of throw it in.
Yes.
You know, it's just like coming back and, oh, okay, you're back. Yeah, no, it's, yeah, no, no, we're fine. You get your work done. Yeah, yeah, no, work went fine. I met this one and that one. And, you know, everything went worked out a little bit well. You know, but, you know, this, you know, it might be, you might check the car, though. But, you know, it's like this and that. When you're going like this, you know what I'm saying? You throw it in, you know, pleasantly so they don't, you know, check the car. Okay, yeah, and then you go on to the next thing. So they don't take it seriously. You know, otherwise it's, what do you do to the car?
Yeah, the car's total.
Okay. Prasa, have you become satisfied by encouraging others to identify the body and mind with the self? Right? So he's encouraging because you take up the Vedic culture, but he's coming from the side of karma and jnana. Right? So the idea is to get from karma and jnana to karma yoga and jnana yoga. But it's not necessarily that they do.
Yes.
Like that. Because from karma yoga and jnana yoga, you can get to bhakti yoga. Right? That's the whole idea. That's the yoga ladders. You go through these stages and get to bhakti. But they have it, so he's encouraging to start the process, but the encouragement to go all the way through isn't strong enough. Okay, footnote 41. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to 152, Vyasadeva is the descendant of Parasara. A greatly powerful sage had the privilege of having a great parentage, which should not have given Vyasadeva cause for despondency. Being a great son of a great father, he should not have identified the self with the body or the mind. Ordinary men with a poor fund of knowledge can identify the body as self or the mind as self. But Vyasadeva should not have done so. One cannot be cheerful by nature unless one is factually seated in self-realization, which is transcendental to the material body and mind. Right?
Yes. So,
Haribol. No identification. Okay. Similarly, in Bhagavad Gita 2.2.3, Lord Krishna addressed Arjuna as Partha to point out that depression and lamentation are not befitting an heir of a noble lineage, especially when he is the son of Krishna's aunt. Quote, the Supreme Personality of God has said, my dear Arjuna, how have these impurities come upon you? They are not at all befitting a man who knows the value of life. They lead not to higher planets, but to infamy, O son of Prita. Do not yield to this degrading impotence. It does not become you. Give up such petty weakness of heart and arise, O chastiser of the enemy. Right? So he's referring to his parentage here. Right?
Yes.
Because that, he shouldn't, this shouldn't come up.
Yeah.
Right? You know, why is he lamenting like, you know, a general person? So, but here Narad Muni, you know, deals in a more, I say, a little bit more indirect. So, are you satisfied by doing this, you know? Because here Arjuna is, you know, Kshatriya, you know, Krishna's his friend, like this, and so it's going on. But here, you know, Vyasadeva is in the position of a Brahmin, the spiritual master is there, so then it you can... use more of an intellectual kind of approach. While the other is like, you know, hey, you're coming from this line, you know, you kind of, you know, get it together, suck it up, come on. You know. Does that make sense? You
know, later, he says, it's worthless. I mean, it's worthless.
Worthless. No, that'll be there. But you start off, you know, so you said it, you know, you get that. And then when they want to know, then you show up, it's worthless. But otherwise, if they don't want to know or they still it's a value, then basically you just have to show how it's like that. But because he's thought, maybe it's because I haven't directly given the pastimes of the Lord, therefore Narad Muni is coming to establish that point. Right? You know, if he was sitting there going, you know, what do these people want? You know, I've written everything, then, you know, good chance Narad Muni might not have come by for at least establishing about Bhagavatam. Right? No, it's because he didn't present it, you know, in comic form.
Yes.
Like, that's how they're going to take it. You know, and then he sat down.
Interpretive dance.
Hmm?
Interpretive dance, maybe.
Yes. Yeah, that could have worked also. Maybe a little less of it. Not necessarily everybody would have liked it.
No, that's true.
Okay, so in here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Prabhupada ki jai, samadhi ta bhakti vidi ki jai, jai jai gaura pe.
Leibo.
For a couple of students who was doing the essays, the essays on the previous, the questions in the previous chapter, you swap the essay question with the third review question. So the third review question is now the essay, and the essay question is one of the reviews.
Oh.
The third review question was, what was the reason for the Vyasadeva's dissatisfaction?
Yes.
Speak more about that.
Okay. Okay. Oh, that's for this chapter.
The one we just finished.
Okay, what is this? Okay. No one could have written their essay.
I'm expecting.